We'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelovitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks on Le'ilui Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Leah ben Abba and Leah Bas Avraham, and Karen's brother, Yoshua ben Shimon Dov, their neshamas should have an aliyah. We are in the middle of the 17th Mishnah of the 5th chapter of Perkei Avos. We are discussing arguments for the sake of heaven and trying to understand what Chazal are trying to teach us in Perkei Avos about how to argue, why to argue, distinguishing between arguments that are worthwhile to have, arguments that are destructive, and through the somewhat ambiguous language of the Mishnah, by analyzing the commentaries. And as I mentioned last week, we're going to end off today by seeing what Rabbi Sacks has to say in his latest book that came out right before he passed away, in terms of how to use this Mishnah to help us understand political discourse in contemporary culture, which obviously has a lot of current ramifications in Yana Dioma, as they say, as what's happening in the news. So let's review the Mishnah briefly. Famous Mishnah, the Mishnah says, Kol machlokes shehi l'shem shemayim, every dispute that is for the sake of heaven, sofa l'hiskayim, that dispute or something about that dispute will endure. Sofa l'hiskayim. We said we need to understand what a dispute is, what l'shem shemayim is, and what enduring is. That's one of the things we're analyzing through the Mishnah. But if the machlokas is she'eino l'shem shemayim, the dispute is not for the sake of heaven, ein sofa l'hiskayim, it will not endure. Examples, ezohi machlokas shi l'shem shemayim, what is a dispute that is for the sake of heaven? That is a dispute between Hillel and Shammai. What is a dispute that is not for the sake of heaven, l'shem shemayim? Zu machlokas Korach v'chol adaso, Korach and his congregation, their dispute was not for the sake of heaven. So to review the big questions that we need to address, what, how do you define dispute? What's considered for the sake of heaven? What's not for the sake of heaven? What does it mean to endure? Is this Mishnah saying that this machlokas that's for the sake of heaven will endure? Is that a natural occurrence, that a just a regular phenomenon throughout the world, that if the machlokas, if the dispute is for the sake of heaven, it will endure, and if not, it won't endure? That's just how the world works. Or is it a divine intervention that makes this work or not work? And what do the examples of Korach and his Adaso being the not for the sake of heaven, as well as Hillel and Shammai, add to our discussion of what is considered a dispute for the sake of heaven and not for the sake of heaven? So if you remember briefly from last week, the Rambam set it up, the Meiri discussed it further in terms of the explanation of a dispute for the sake of heaven. We were describing for the sake of heaven as being for the understanding of trying to get to truth. If the dispute is in order to get to truth, then the dispute will endure. What does that mean, that the dispute will endure? So that too, do we want disputes to endure? Don't we want disputes to be resolved and settled? So we had different explanations about that as well. Maybe the people who have the disputes will endure and will be allowed to have future disputes, and that there's nothing wrong inherently with disputes. As long as people argue for the sake of heaven, then, as the Meiri pointed out, maybe it's how you do the dispute as well. So if I'm doing the dispute for the sake of heaven, that's qualitatively different type of dispute. The way I dispute would be different. And when I look for the truth and I'm trying to get to the truth, then presumably when the other side, whoever's wrong, sees what that truth is, they will gladly say that they were wrong and that the other person was right. So when I have a dispute for the sake of truth, and that's how we're understanding for the sake of heaven, for the sake of truth, then the people in within the disputes will live long, be happy, they'll be able to communicate with each other, they'll get along with each other, even though they are disputing, and that once there is a truth that is uncovered, both parties will admit to that truth and not have a hard time giving up their own opinion as long as their goal is the truth. So that's the basic understanding that we've seen so far. We mentioned in the source of the Magen Avots of the Rashbats, we added to this idea that when it comes to Hillel and Shammai, or Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, their disputes for the sake of heaven, for the sake of truth, we added to the point that there might be multiple truths. Right? So it's not just that one person is right and one person is wrong, but that Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, both the opinions of Hillel and Shammai, or Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, have truth to them. We might need to decide which one we're going to follow for the sake of law, but that doesn't mean that one is inherently right and one is inherently wrong. And this is going to be important, and it's going to help us try, as we develop today's shir, get to the end game here in terms of how practical to make this is. Is it that there's an MS, there is a truth, and then there's a sheker, there's a falsehood, and we're trying to get to the MS, and the way we do that is by disputing for honesty and being open to other people's opinions and being open to be able to be wrong. That's one way of looking at it, but that's a sort of different vision than there might be multiple truths and we have to decide which way to follow. And if we're going to take this Mishnah and put it into contemporary terms or to political discourse, or even if more in my areas in terms of communication skills and relationships, in terms of, let's talk about Shalom Bayis, for instance, how one spouses argue with each other, or family members argue with each other, or friends argue with each other, not necessarily about halachic matters or not necessarily about political matters, but if they're arguing about things that are just about, you know, who's taking out the garbage? Is there a right and a wrong? Is one truth and one not truth? Do we have multiple truths of who's supposed to take out the garbage? So exactly how this is going to filter down into a practical realm will be interesting, but we'll have to keep this in mind, these different varying ways of looking at the Mishnah as we get there. But before we get to that practical, let's take a look at one more important Rishon, an early source here, in his understanding of the Mishnah, and that's Rav Matisyahu Hayitzari. In the middle of the second page of your source sheets, where I think he adds a few points that have not been made explicit. We might have alluded to them in the past, last week, but we didn't see it inside, and I think that he has a lot to add to this discussion. So let's see this inside. Samach Maimar Zeh L'Kodem. So now, if you remember the previous Mishnayos that we've spoken about until this point, there's two things to keep in mind. The previous Mishnah that we did was about love that would endure, love that wouldn't endure, right? David and Yehonasan versus Tamar, Amnon and Tamar. This was an unconditional love or contingent love. That was the previous Mishnah. As I mentioned last week, some versions actually put that Mishnah after our Mishnah. So keep that in mind. Whether the love Mishnah comes before or after this is going to be somewhat important. But more importantly, for starters, is that before the love, the Mishnah talked about love, were the Mishnayos that spoke about the different personality types. So four types of learners about memory, four types of learners about speed, four types of people in terms of how they get angry, and four types of people about how generous they are. Right? So we had all these different types of personalities that we discussed in several Mishnayos. So Rav Matisyahu Hayitzari is saying here is that the reason why this Mishnah comes after that series of the various different personalities is as follows. Samach Ma'amar Zeh L'Kodem, reading inside, Kiteva Ha-me'ayanim mechayev liot b'neiam machloket mitzad chiluf midoseyam v'chalkehem b'malos hasichlios o b'pechisus. The fact that we have so many different types of people, with so many different types of ways of thinking, with so many different character traits, is going to necessitate the fact that there will be disputes. Because we're people who are all different from each other, and we think differently, and we feel differently, and we have different values, and we have different things that are important to us, that will mean that there will definitionally be disputes amongst us. And that's really important point. Disagreements are part of life. They're going to happen because everybody is different and we all have different perspectives and different abilities in terms of our cognitive styles, the way we think. It's an essential point that he starts off with. And then he continues. Va'amar, sha'afa pisha kol echad yira tainos na oseyen ve'in lanu svar lachria echad mishtei akitos. This is so powerful. Everybody has their own proofs. Everybody thinks they are correct. My proof, my argument is na'os. It's better. It's beautiful. It's amazing. And ein lanu svara lahachria echad mishtei akitos. We might not be able to decide who is correct. This is very different than how we started off last week, and as I recapped before, that there's one truth, and the arguments will get to that truth. That's a beautiful vision, if only that were true all the time, right? Sometimes there isn't necessarily this end goal, this truth, that only if we argued about it correctly, we'll get to the truth. Sometimes it's very difficult to decide who's right and who's wrong, no matter how you argue, because some of this has to do with values and some of this has to do with opinions that aren't necessarily provable or non-provable. Hakol tali b'kavano. So now, if that's the case, if we're talking about, we're moving this away, even though he'll later get to truth, but we're moving it away from one particular truth at this point, because again, everybody's different, everybody's going to have different values, everybody's going to have different systems of thinking, then you're not going to necessarily be able to get to one conclusive truth. So if that's the case, hakol taloi bekavanas hacholkim, it all depends on what our motivation in arguing is. She'im kol echad lo yichavin rak lidrosh v'lasor ha'emes, if everybody's trying to get to the truth, shtei akitos yiskaimu v'yebneim ava v'achva, then both sides will keep going, they'll be fine, they'll get along with each other, they'll be able to go to Thanksgiving meals with each other and Shabbos dinners, and they'll be able to communicate and have a nice relationship with each other, because they're both trying to get to truth and they're both discussing it. I would say not just trying to get to truth, but how they discuss it is important as well, even though he doesn't emphasize that. I think that's what the Meiri's point was from before, is that we're trying to get to truth and we're going to communicate in ways that are respectful, that try to get to that truth, and with that, our relationship can endure. We can endure together as friends, as relatives, even if we have different opinions that are trying to get to the essence or the truth. V'ulai yofia Hashem aleihem v'yira derech ha'emes. Again, a great line. Maybe, I don't know, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe God will grant you guys, me, you, everybody, the light to see whose opinion is correct. But that's a maybe. We don't know. We might not get to that truth at the end. But as long as we're going about it in a way that we're looking for truth, we're looking to understand each other, we're looking to communicate in respectful styles, then we can be friends and we can continue to agree or disagree. And maybe eventually we'll get to an end game, but we might not. It's ulai. Maybe we will. But, aval, im yechavein echad mehem el hanitzuach, Ulaharos chachmaso al chavero. And this is also an important point. If one of them, doesn't have to be both, if only one of them, the goal is to win and to show that I am right over you. Now it's not about truth. It's about personalities. It's about ego. It's about me showing that I'm smarter and I know more and I read more and I listen to the news more and all that stuff. Or I, even halachically, I studied more. If it's about me showing up you, then Hashem ya'anisham ba'ofen sheyichlu kasher asa lekorach ba'adaso. Then you got no shot. God's gonna push you down. Might take some time, might be a long run, but the person who's trying to win, to beat the other person, will eventually lose. That's what the Mishnah is telling us according to Rav Matzyahu Haditzari. It could just be one of them. If it's both of them, then they'll both lose. If it's one of them, then that person will lose and the other person will endure. Kihem ta'anos na'osos, hayu omrim shekevon shekola eda kedoshim, v'kibla ha'torah, lama yichod shevet bilti shevet, v'ish bilti ish, l'dore doros, yos nivchor la'avodas Hashem Yisbaruch. Now he brings it back to Korach and his congregation. Korach had good points. Korach was making good arguments in the sense that we are all holy. That's true. We all accepted the Torah. All the tribes are in this together. Why would you elevate one tribe over the other? Why does Shevet Levi get to rule? We were all chosen from God. It's a good point. V'lu haya b'derech shelas tamayanos. If he would have asked it, if he would have brought it up nicely, we would have accepted it. There would have been a discussion. As somebody, I think, pointed out last week when we discussed, we didn't see this point inside, but when we brought it up as a thought, somebody pointed to Bino Slavchad. It's a great example. They had a question. They wanted to know why they can't inherit. They brought it up nicely, and the law was adapted for them. So if Korach and his congregation would have went about this in a better way, then there might have been something to discuss. Aval yad Hashem yisbarach ki lo yarak b'derach kinah v'nitzuach. They were only envious. They wanted to win. They wanted to take the power. Ulezek kulam ba'ofen ha'nimratz lahaskir l'doros im b'prat levilti ya'oru al kahuna im b'chla l'chol davar din v'orash yikra shichlu shnei tamin chachamim. And that's why God made this this sort of spectacle of this whole argument, because he wanted to show, if you want to argue, great, there are ways to argue. This is not the way to argue. And if you argue for the sake of winning or jealousy, then you will lose. Now, what about Hillel and Shammai? So he continues, Ulezen nirali shelakach l'shem Shammai machlokes Hillel v'Shammai. That's why Hillel and Shammai are chosen as the paradigm of a good machlokes. That's for the sake of heaven. V'lo machlokes beis Hillel beis Shammai. I think Barbara pointed this out last week. We choose Hillel and Shammai and not beis Hillel and beis Shammai. The house of Hillel and the house of Shammai, they're not the paradigm of a good dispute. Only Hillel and Shammai, the people themselves, are a good dispute. Ki heim chalku b'harbe mekomos beis Hillel beis Shammai, v'Hillel v'Shammai lo nechalku rak shlosha dvarim. So Hillel and Shammai only disagreed about three things. Beis Hillel and beis Shammai disagreed about, you know, hundreds of things. L'fishayu b'neim l'famim atzumim v'nitzuchim. Within Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, within the schools, they sometimes actually did fight for the wrong reasons. And it's as it says in the Gemara Kedushin, Al yichansu tamidei Hillel kan shenitarnanin heim v'lo lilmo Torah ba'im. Right, so there was disputes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai that were about fights, that were about ego, they weren't listening to each other. That's not the same in terms of Hillel and Shammai themselves. So the dispute that we're looking for is between Hillel and Shammai. They disagreed three times, maybe they disagreed other times, but came to conclusions that were similar through their arguments, through their disputes. But the point here is that they did it in the appropriate way. Now, he continues here, and now ties it into the other Mishnah that I mentioned before that we did last week in terms of love. And I think it's worthwhile to do it because it'll broaden our understanding of the previous Mishnah and this Mishnah as well. But if you notice, that's why he starts here with a Yud Zayin. It means that it's the next Mishnah. So Tes Zayin 16 was his Mishnah of disputes, was the Mishnah we're doing now. Yud Zayin is the Mishnah of love. In our versions, we did it flip. R16 was love and R17 is arguments. So keep that in mind. I told you that before, that he's going to flip it. He had first disputes, now love. So he's transitioning from the discussion about disputes and how does this impact our discussion of contingent or conditional love or unconditional love. So he says that's directly connected. Sama ze lekodem lomar shetamidei chachamim hachokim l'shem shamayim lo dai shelo yeh behem sinah. It's not enough that when we dispute halachic disputes, tamidei chachamim, our sages are disputing, it's not enough that they just don't hate each other. We want to develop a love. They want to get to truth. We want to get to uncover the hiddenness of the opinions, the depths. Since everybody's discussing this based on their own intellect, their own knowledge. When we get to it, we try to go through the dispute to get to truth. It's not going to be lost forever. So again, this is assuming that there's some level of truth that we can get to. And once we get to that truth will be enduring. Lies, falsehoods won't be able to be uncovered until we analyze them and prove them wrong. Because these sages are going back and forth, they're asking questions, they're answering, they're looking for proofs, for disproofs. Each side is helping the other get to this ultimate truth. They will never stop loving each other. And this paradigm is the love we spoke about us in the previous week, him in the future Mishnah, in this Mishnah, which is, this is what David and Yohanan's love was all about. It was about getting to truth. And when you have a love that is about getting to truth, then that love can endure. Shemitzadji b'shneim yusak ha-shlemus v'hi ha-isah sibas ha-avasam. They were trying to improve each other. They're trying to get better. That's why they loved each other. Lo mash yusak to'el as'ish mitzad chaveru. Excuse me, Niskaima. It wasn't for the sake of a benefit. We're friends, we have a relationship because I get something out of it, you get something out of it, self-interest. No, it was about perfection, it was about getting better, it was about improvement, it was about truth. Afilu be'es chiyad Yohanan v'isparsem shidud yimloch she'roi lisno oso ki Yohanan ya'ave amalchus mitzad aviv. Right, so Yohanan wanted to get, he was due the kingdom, so even though David's existence would actually take that away, he still loved David. Their love wasn't dependent on getting anything. Through their relationship, they're able to get to this truth, to this perfection. That will endure. That will never disappear. So the Ramatzal Yitzhar puts together the two Mishnayos and says that the disputes that are for the sake of heaven is a paradigm for relationships where people can interact. They can argue, they can disagree, but they're doing it for the sake of truth. They're doing it for the sake of getting better. And because of that, that will lead to a love that will endure. It's a beautiful point, because the love that doesn't endure is when we're not in it for truth, and when we get to an argument and I think I'm 100% right and you think you're 100% right, and we can't discuss it and we can't agree or disagree or do anything, then we end up not talking. We end up putting our relationship to the side. Oh, you support that person? I can't talk to you. You support that person? I can't talk to you. Because now the love that we've had doesn't endure. It breaks. So there's something in our approach to it that is wrong. There is something in our approach that's not looking necessarily for truth or arguing correctly or disagreeing appropriately, because that disagreement will split us apart. So now, our question is going to become, so practically speaking, how do we do this? Because I'm sure, you know, there are some people in the audience who are agreeing with me. There are some people in the audience who might be disagreeing with me in terms of how this approaches. And there's probably some people in the audience who are saying, yes, I wish the other side would argue that way, because that's how I argue. And then, you know, the other side is saying, you know, I wish the other side would argue that way because I'm looking for the truth and they're lying and I'm right. So we're sort of in this situation where everybody, again, it's sort of the same. We're all fighting, and it is possible. We can't. I can't tell you. It is possible, as Ramatzia Yitzhari alluded to, that one side is doing it wrong and the other side is doing it right. It is possible, right? You could have, like, let's go Korach versus Moshe, right? Moshe presumably was doing it right. Korach was the one who was doing it wrong. So, you know, you could have that possibility. It's not that both parties are necessarily wrong, but I'm pretty sure that any side of a disagreement has work to do in terms of how they disagree. That's my guess. And because of that, I think it's important to possibly learn some lessons from this. So what I want to do now, I'm going to share a different screen, is I want to show you how Rabbi Sacks takes this idea and puts it into political discourse. I'm not a political person. This is not going to be favoring one side of a discussion over another. It's just a broad analysis by Rabbi Sacks. It's not about being to the left or to the right or who you support, who you don't support. It's more of a big picture discussion. So this is Rabbi Sacks in his latest book. There's a book that came up after that was published after this, called Judaism's Life-Changing Ideas. I think that's technically considered the last book that he published. Even though that's true, he technically published it he published those ideas online first. So all of those ideas in his book of Judaism's life-changing ideas, which are based on the Parsha, were all published weekly through his website and through his through his social media and email campaigns. So all those ideas were sort of out there being developed for a while. The book itself was just published later. So in my mind, this book, Morality, which is the last book that came out that wasn't sort of pre-published online beforehand, in my head is his last book. But it's an excellent book, highly recommended. Anybody who wants to purchase it or rent it or borrow it or whatever, Morality, a Restoring the Common Good in Divided Times. And in the book, he uses a lot of Jewish ideas to help frame the current political and social conversations in order to get back to what he looks at as a vision for how we can move forward using his concept of what morality is. So smack in the middle of the book, in chapter 13, he talks about two ways of arguing. And he starts off the chapter by quoting a comments by former President Barack Obama, who argues that the whole I'll just read his words. I don't want to misread it. But Barack Obama criticizes the concept of using social media as a political weapon to show how woke people are, how ultra-sensitive they are to social justice issues. They use social media to show how in I am with a certain crowd. This is, I'm in the right here, and I will show you that I am in the right by both promoting the fact that I am in the right on social media and degrading and debasing anybody who is in the wrong, in my right versus their wrong, on social media. And what President Obama was arguing was that that's not a good way to communicate, right? Using social media as a way to show, to sort of social signal as I am right and you are wrong is not a way to get to dialogue, and it's not a way to create lasting change. Because, and I'll just highlight some of the points that are made here, you could follow where I underlined, not every issue is a clash between right and wrong. Sometimes it is between right and right, between two strong but incompatible ideals. Right? And that gets to a really important point that I think we mentioned and highlighted in Rav Matisyahu HaYitzhari. In contrast to last week, where we focused on the Rambam and the Meiri, there's a right and we want to discuss it, and how we discuss it is important, how we get to that right. It's important to frame this that sometimes there is no right and wrong. It could be a right and a right. It could be different, incompatible ideals. This is important to me, and that's important to you, and we just disagree, and we're never going to get to who's quote-unquote right. So because of that, again, social media is not necessarily the place to have these disagreements, because you can't communicate, you can't talk, you can't understand what the other person is doing. And he quotes a few other ideas, but in the bottom right here of page 185, he says that once President Obama made the statement, a lot of people disagreed with him and said, no, we need social media to disagree. That's our voice. That's how we do politics, is on this disagreeing on social media. And Rabbi Sachs concludes that little discussion and says, what ultimately is at stake between those who agreed and those who disagreed with President Obama, it is about more than whether social media can bring about political change. It is about whether politics has space for ambiguity and complexity. Do I owe anything by way of respect to those who disagree with me? Can we acknowledge that our allies have faults and our opponents have virtues? Is politics basically about, you know, right and wrong, or is there might be able to have realize that I might not always be right, and you might not always be right, and you might have points that are important to you, and I have points that are important to me, and those clash with each other, and then how do we have a dialogue and come to compromise and come to discussion and come to ways to move forward? If that's right, that's the ideal way of presumably of the way it should work. If not, if it's just about me signaling that I'm right and proving you wrong, then you're going to have these continual divisiveness, and society will continue to go down into two differing parties that don't want to talk to each other, and that the people don't have any ways of communicating or coming to any levels of agreement or disagreement. So Rabbi Sachs says is that on page 186, what he's going to do in this chapter is take our Mishnah, of disputing for the sake of heaven and try to lay that out as a framework for how the world can discuss things like this much better, how America can discuss things like politics so much better if we take this dispute for the sake of heaven as a paradigm. So he says here, Judaism is unusual in that virtually all its canonical texts are woven through with arguments. Everything's about argument. We fight about everything. We dispute in everything's a machlokes. Right? In the Bible, Abraham, Moses, Jeremiah, Job all argue extensively with God. In Medrash, rabbis argue with one another on the basis of the principle that there are 70 faces or interpretations of every text. Right? Shivim Panim Latola, Torah. In the Mishnah, the rabbis argue about Jewish law. And in the Gemara, they argue about the arguments of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah argues, and the Gemara argues about the arguments. And now this is a fascinating analysis here. He says, so the Rambam came along in medieval times and said, you know what? I'm going to make a code of law that's going to remove all the arguments, right? That's what the Mishnah Torah was. Forget about all the disputes in the Gemara. I'm just going to give you straight up, this is what you're supposed to do, right? So ironically, that Rambam's Mishnah Torah generated more arguments than any other text for the next 800 years until today, right? Other people have conversations. Jews have arguments. And that's what Rabbi Sacks for. Everything's about a dispute. Everything's about arguing. So how do we do it? So he says, inevitably, though, the rabbis reflected on the nature of argument itself. Were all arguments good? Were all equally valid? Were there some arguments that were destructive and dangerous? In clarifying their thoughts, they came up with a major distinction between what they called argument for the sake of heaven and one that they held not to have been for the sake of heaven. What's a dispute for the sake of heaven? So that's Hillel and Shammai. And then Rabbi Sacks quotes the Gemara that was alluded to by the Tashbetz that we saw last week, is that there was disputes going back, the school of Shammai, the school of Hillel. The former claimed the law is with our view. The latter said the law is with our view. A bas kol, a heavenly voice, comes down and said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. These are both the living word of God. There's truth to both, but the law is in accordance with the school of Hillel. So the Gemara itself asks, since both these and those are the words of the living God, why was the school of Hillel entitled to have the law determined in accordance with their ruling? Right? If there's truth to both sides, why do we follow Beis Hillel? So there's a beautiful answer. Because they were kindly and modest. They studied their own rulings and those of the house of Shammai, and were even so humble as to mention the teachings of the school of Shammai before their own. So the reason we follow Beis Hillel is because of how they argued. There were arguments and there was truth to both sides, but we follow one side because, unlike Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel did it in a way that was productive and conducive, showed their humility, showed their ability to listen to the other side and to weigh the other side. And even if they come to a different conclusion than the other side, they did it in a style that we are promoting. That's for the sake of heaven. That's what the arguments that we're looking for. So Rabbi Sacks continues, the concept of arguments of the sake of heaven allowed the sages to reframe disagreement as a unifying, not just divisive force. That is implicit in the radical idea that each of the two opposing opinions can represent the word of the living God. This suggests an alternative to the principle of Aristotelian logic, the law of contradiction that states either P or not P. Either an assertion is true or it's false. That's what Aristotle thought. So not necessarily so, say the sages. Two contrary propositions may both be true from different perspectives or at different times or under different circumstances, right? Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai could be both right. And as we mentioned last week, according to some opinions, maybe Beis Shammai will be followed later or at a different perspective, or maybe for different people, there'll be different things to follow. But at the end of the day, there could be multiple possible contrary truths that we need to follow one of them, but it doesn't mean the other one is wrong. And the way we get to the practical how we follow is through disagreements in a healthy way, in a constructive way, in a humble way. And that's how we can come to a practical way moving forward. So he, there's a lot here. We're not going to read through the whole chapter, but he says that it's not a zero sum disagreement, right? It's not just about one having one winner and one loser. There's not just, right? The deeper point is that greatest minds, bottom paragraph, know that theirs is not the only truth. The school of Hillel knew that more than one interpretation can be given. That is why they studied the view of their opponents alongside and even before their own. They were kindly and modest because they realized that truth is not an all or nothing affair. This is a very hard thing to agree with and a hard thing to realize if we think that our truth is correct and that there's no truth to the other person's opinion. And because of that, that's why dialogue will not be able to happen. The only way for dialogue and moving forward and change and compromise and be able to have people discuss things with each other is to be able to realize that there might be some element, even if I don't agree with it, there might be some element of truth in another person's opinion. In contrast to this was Korach. And we're not going to analyze Korach in full detail now. Rabbi Sacks does it on page 188 and 189. He says Korach was a populist. Korach tried to get through the politics of anger, tried to get people on his side. And he goes through how populist movements have started up in the past, how they continue to be popular even in contemporary times, and the danger of populist movements, again, and how Korach did that is well analyzed here by Rabbi Sacks. So you could check that out on page 188, 189, and 190. But we're going to pick up where we talk about here, where he says that Korach is considered an argument not for the sake of heaven versus Hillel and Shammai, or Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, who are for the sake of heaven. And he concludes here this section where he says, what matters on the bottom of page 191, bottom right, what matters in Judaism is why the argument was undertaken and how it was conducted. Because those are really our two essential points of this Mishnah. Why it was undertaken, that's the motivation, and how it is conducted. What is fundamental difference between an argument for the sake of heaven and one that is not? Following Meiri, we saw that inside last week, and other medieval commentators, the sages were distinguishing between an argument for the sake of truth and one for the sake of victory. Hillel and Shammai were arguing for the sake of truth, the determination of God's will. Korach, who challenged Moses and Aaron for leadership, was arguing for the sake of victory. He wanted to be a leader too. In an argument for the sake of truth, if you win, you win. But if you lose, you also win. Because being defeated by the truth is the only defeat that is also a victory. We are enlarged thereby. Right? So if it's not about winning. If you prove to me I'm wrong, I'm happy. I win. It's a win-win. Because I want truth. So it's about how I do it. That's the modesty and the ability to communicate and to listen to the other side. Rabbi Sacks talks a lot about listening in other chapters. But it's also about why I'm doing it. It's not about winning. It's about trying to come to a truth. So now I think here's the tension that's hard to fully explain away. Because this gets back to what I think in the commentaries is the deeper tension. Does that mean there is no truth? Does that mean all opinions are correct? All opinions have merit to it? Or is there an official wrong, right? So let's say Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai were arguing and one of them came up with an interpretation that was not Divrei Elokim Chaim, right? It wasn't from God. It wasn't something that was based in Torah. So do we give value and merit to such a truth if they're literally wrong? Are there cases where it is black and white, where this person is just factually incorrect? How do we, right? So it's not that we can't disagree. It's not that we can't dispute. So how do we, it's basically, I think the fundamental question here is that do we distinguish between, are all opinions correct? Are all arguments or sides valid or valuable? Are there things that are wrong? Is there really no truth? Is that what we're saying? It's sort of so subjective. So Rabbi Sacks says that's a postmodern idea, right? That there's no real truth. And here on page 192, the second paragraph, right? The entire thrust of postmodernism is a hermeneutics of suspicion. There's no truth, only victory. So he says Judaism rejects this idea. At the end of that paragraph, there is such thing as truth and collaborative argument in pursuit of it. That is the basis of trust on which all genuine communication depends. So there is, we could get to a truth. There is something that we might be able to get to if we disagree and discuss things in a way that comes to a, that hopefully we come to a conclusion. But I want to be clear here, because I think this is where it gets sticky and it gets a little confusing. Because what he's here saying, based on the Meiri, is that there is a truth, and through discussion and collaboration, we can get to that truth. But remember, there could be multiple truths. And remember how he started off the chapter, which I think is a really important line, which doesn't sound exactly like this. He says, not every issue is a clash between right and wrong. Sometimes it is between right and right, between two strong but incompatible ideas. And again, I think it's so important because it's not always going to come to, if we just argue this correctly, we'll get to a truth. Sometimes it's multiple truths can be true. So it's not that there is no truth, right? There are things that could be not true. It's not that everything is true. There could be things that are not true. And some arguments, if we do it for the right reasons and we do it the correct way, can come to an ultimate conclusion and truth. That's one type of argument, and those are important. And that's one type of argument that Mishnah is talking about. But there are other types of arguments where both sides can have their right, and that through argument, you might not get to a finalized truth where one side is going to admit, you are right, I am wrong, because they can both have elements of being right to them. It is still essential in those situations, even if you're not going to get to a fine, firm, right versus wrong, to do it in a way that is respectful, that listens to the other side, to communicate in a way that is, right, that's the how. It's not about me winning, it's about us discussing. And it's okay to not always be able to come to a complete truth. So I think that's an important distinction to make. Some arguments will lead, if done right, and done respectfully, and done for the sake of truth, will lead to an ultimate truth. Some will lead to not who's right and who's wrong, who's true and who's false, but an understanding of both sides to understand that there might be elements of truth and elements of falsehood, or just total truth on both sides. And then we have to come to a way of moving forward and coming to a compromise and figuring out a way how to get elements of both sides into our move forward. Because I think it's important to make that distinction between those two types of arguments. Sometimes you get to a truth, sometimes you're not going to get to a truth. You're going to get to that multiple truths, and that's Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that you just need to then decide. Are we going to follow Beis Hillel, follow Beis Shammai? Okay, so your political opinion has truth maybe. My political opinion has truth maybe. Now we got to find a compromise to be able to move forward. That's the paradigm here. It's not that we're going to, we can disagree. We can discuss to try to get to a truth, but it's really important to realize that sometimes you're not going to get to that ultimate, I'm right, that's the truth, that's wrong. And the last thing we'll read here on the right-hand side of 193, where I bracketed it off, hence the power of Judaism's insistence on the legitimacy of argument for the sake of heaven. Judaism does not silence dissent. On the contrary, it dignifies it. It was institutionalized in the biblical era in the form of the prophets who spoke truth to power. In the rabbinic era, it lived in the culture of argument evident on every page of the Mishnah Gemara and their commentaries. In the contemporary state of Israel, argumentativeness is a part of the very texture of its democratic freedom in the strongest possible contrast to much of the rest of the Middle East. So Rabbi Sacks is saying that this is a legacy that we have through Judaism, through Torah, through the study of Torah, that can possibly help us move forward in the political realm as well. Now, I know it's not so simple. I know that these types of things are subjective and will continue to be subjective for the same reason why, again, Korach, go to Korach and Moshe, right? We didn't say, if one side is doing it wrong, right? If one side is not coming to the table in the right way, then it's not easy to be able to just say, okay, so now I'm going to communicate for the sake of heaven. And I'll do it nicely, and I'll do it in a good way. And then the other side is, you know, creating a rebellion. It's complicated, right? We get that. It's not always so black and white. But for the most part, I think that the message is still true, that if we can try, if both sides can try to work on understanding other sides and understanding that sometimes there is no complete right and wrong, and that when it comes to things of morality and things especially morality, there's a subjectivity involved at points where if we think that we are 100% right and they are 100% wrong, and we don't go about it the way of discussion and discourse and listening and compromise and be able to have these values that are important to us, then we will continue to not get anywhere. We'll continue to fight, and we'll continue to make enemies and not have unity and not be able to sit next to people in shul, or again have those Thanksgiving or Shabbos dinners with each other, because that there's no love involved with that. There's no truth involved with that in terms of being able to discuss it in an honest and real way. It's just about victory, and it's about, and the way it's done is incorrect and it's inappropriate. And that's why we have some of the ramifications that we have in terms of what's happening in our society, within the Jewish community, within the broader world as well. Yes, Paula, I'm just going to make a caveat before we start with comments. If this gets sort of counter where the spirit of what the Mishnah is trying to say, from whatever perspective it is, I'm going to sort of shut down the discussion. Not that we can't have a discussion. I just don't think that this is the right forum to have a discussion. Maybe we'll sort of stop the shear and move forward and try to have a discussion in a good way. But I'm not sure Zoom at this point is the right way to do that. But discussion is definitely important. So I'm happy to hear comments and the like, but I will use my veto power to keep the shear in sheer style for now. Yes, Paula, go for it.
Lately, in politics, we are confronting the idea of alternate truths. Mm-hmm. What kind of truth is that?
Right. So that gets to what Rabbi Sacks was talking about in terms of, I think, some of the postmodernism idea. It's not true that anything is true, right? That's not the case, right? And that's the sort of the metaphor that I was giving with Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, is that, you know, if Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai came with an argument that was totally not based on Torah, right, then we wouldn't say Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, because then that's not divrei Elokim chayim. It's something foreign to that, right? So in terms of sort of a subjective truth and that the postmodernism of that there is no truth, I'm not, you know, Rabbi Sacks said it, you know, and I'm not sure Judaism can say that we agree with such an approach. That being said, There might be ways to have dialogues with people who think in terms of alternative truths, in ways that can be productive and that can try to get to some sort of again compromise, being able to live together in society in a healthy way. You know, part of politics, part of being social creatures and living in a country is being with people who don't agree with us and will have alternative views that we will not agree with, right? So that's part of the issue here, is that it's nice to say that when it comes to halacha, we'll come at it from a way that's divrei Elokim chayim, and we'll agree, we'll sort of agree to disagree and decide who's right and move forward. By the way, that's hard to do too. And we have disputes when it comes to halacha in ways that are not for the sake of heaven, right? That happens. And it's easy to say, that side's not for the sake of heaven, I'm for the sake of heaven, that side's not for the sake of heaven, or that's not, I'm divrei Elokim chayim, they're not divrei Elokim chayim. So this is hard even within that realm, but especially in a political realm where there are people who don't care about what, you know, the Torah has to say, or what our values have to say. That's part of the issue, is that values, and Jonathan Haidt, who's a psychologist, Rabbi Sacks actually once had a dialogue with him, and in the back of Morality actually has the first review on Rabbi Sacks' book, has a book called The Righteous Mind. I have it somewhere over here. Where he talks about from a psychological perspective, right, why good people are divided by politics and religion, right, and he talks about both theory and studies that he's done as a moral psychologist discussing about morality, politics, religion. You have it's we see it, right? People who are smart, intelligent, you know, good people, that you're not coming from the same points. And he talks about part of that's because of values, and he talks the conservative values versus liberal values are so different. You're coming from different points. It's not about logic. It's about emotions. It's about how I feel. It's about right and wrong. And it's about, again, religion. It's about beliefs. These aren't things that are necessarily provable from any rational argument's sake. And because of that, you will have people on different sides of the aisle who will not agree with each other because they're just coming from totally different perspectives. And that's what, remember, Rabbi Matisyahu Yitzhari said in terms of the reason why this Mishnah is here after all the, there's this type of person and that type of person and this type of thinking and that type of thinking, and people think and feel and act differently, because that's fundamental to being humans in a larger society. We are all going to come at things from a different perspective. And that's why I think, as I emphasized, sometimes it's about coming to a truth and the way of getting to that truth, but other times it's not about truth, right? Because truth is too subjective, right? There's two alternative truths, but it's not just about alternative truths. I can't prove to you how I feel. I can't do it. I can't prove to you why I think this is right and that's wrong. And for the same reason, you can't prove to me why you think the opposite is right and that's wrong, right? So because of that's where we get stuck. And if the only discourse we have, once I believe something is true and you believe something is true and I think I'm right and you think you're right and you're and the other side is wrong, is fight, we're not going to get anywhere. So the only way to have a shot at this is to agree how to debate, how to discuss. Try as best as we can, and sometimes it's not possible because sometimes you need a law, and that law has to follow one side versus the other side. That's how we have to poskim, like Hillel versus Shammai, right? We need some operation here. That's the challenge of politics. We have to decide who we're going to follow on a practical level. But until we get to the point where we can have conversations and agree that another person can have a different opinion than me that I think is fundamentally wrong, but I'm not going to convince them that I'm right. They're not going to convince me that they're right. So what do? So we either fight and we protest and we kill each other, or we have to find a different path of being able to agree or disagree in healthy ways that can hopefully get to some level of being able to live together in a society without fighting all the time, without rebellions, and without violent protests. It's not easy. Again, I sound probably pretty pie in the sky here, but I think that's if you want to take, as Rabbi Sachs does, if you want to take this Mishnah and put it into a political realm, that's what the conclusion you're gonna come out with. Again, I know it's sticky. I know it's not easy. I know it's a difficult thing. And you don't have to, right? You can take this mission and say it's just talking about halacha. And when you're talking about halacha, the halacha is we follow Hillel. And okay, so the Shammai people can give that up and they don't have to worry so much about it, right? It's not like they're giving up too much. It's not necessarily values or I'm right, you're wrong. Okay, Beis Hillel is fine too. I don't know if that's true. I think that sometimes you get the same disagreement and the same passion and value system within the halachic discussion, which is why you have arguments with halacha too. So you have the same problem with halacha. If you want to limit this discussion within the halachic realm and not put it into the political realm, there's a lot to learn about this also. There's a lot to learn about having religious disputes with each other without having to put this into the political realm. Go, and then I'll. But at the end, if we remember, right, just remind me. I want to close with a point about the interpersonal realm, not political and not halachic. The garbage, taking out the garbage realm. I want to just close with that before we end this year. But yeah, Rabbi Shiloni.
Yeah, I would like to say that I'm not going to Korach. Korach is political. I'm going to Hillel Shammai or Bet Hillel Bet Shammai the same way. Mm-hmm. And let's go not hypothetical, but case. It says in the Torah, you have to say to Kriyat Shema b'shoch b'cha u'b'kumecha. The machloket b'shoch b'cha, zman shchiva or zman kima, or mamish, you have to lie down to read the Kriyat Shema. So Beit Hillel says, Zman Shchiva. Beit Shammai say, no, you have to actually lie down. And so the Vikuach is only about how to interpret a pasuk in the Torah. And then comes Rabbi Tarfon, and he comes and says, you know what I did today? I went baderech, and I was lying down and said Kriyat Shema like Beit Shammai. So they told him in Beit HaMidrash, if you would be dead now, you would be guilty in your death, because you sheitetak b'kedivrei Beit Shammai. What was the whole idea there? They came and halacha kebet Hillel because they were the majority. That's all. Not because, it's also because they were nice people and so forth. But they were the majority. Halacha ke majority. Beshochbecha can be explained this way or that way. However, the majority says, this is the way to halacha. Gamarnu. And that's sofa lihitayem. The sofa means the end of the machloket. Now there is halacha. There is no machloket anymore. Sofa lehitkayem.
Right.
In machloket shel politics, ein sofa. It goes on and on and on and on. And Korach till today exists.
So that's an interesting way of reading the Mishnah in terms of you want to say that the first example is a halachic example, and that's going to endure in the sense that we follow one opinion, and we're able to conclude decisively. Right, the sophilis guy means that we're concluding decisively one opinion over the other. But when it comes to political disputes, there's never a decision, and it's always back and forth, and you're never going to have any conclusion. I hear it. There's a few things I would doubt, question. I'm not sure I'm going to do that now in terms of whether it's majority or not, or whether it is because of their, the Gemara says it's because of their personality. I don't know what the majority is there. But besides for that, I'm not sure the Korach dispute was not halachic either, right? Meaning you could understand Korach's dispute as being halachic as well, which is why, again, if he did it in a different way, there might have been the ability to entertain some of his ideas within the system moving forward. So I like that concept, but I think that I'm hopeful that in theory this could be used in a political realm, in the sense that if we can get to a point where we agree, we know we have different opinions, we have different values, it's going to come different places, we go by the majority, we follow that rule, And we respect each other as best as we can. That's the way to move forward. Again, I know it's more difficult, especially when it comes to things of values that we look at as being sort of life and death values, and things in terms of right and wrong and morality. It's just much more complicated. But I think the ideal is at least put in there, and for us to try to get to that place as much as possible. And part of that is, even though I said we're not going to have that dispute now, if it gets political or in this forum, but part of it is modeling how to have, the RCA, Rabbinical Council of America, has a series now called Disputes for the Sake of Heaven, literally from this Mishnah. They labeled it. And they have two different parties on two different sides of political spectrum, rabbinic parties, who, agree with one movement or disagree with another movement. And they debate it. And they basically model what it looks like to debate those two different opinions. And I think that's essential. That's really important to be able to do it. I shut it down for this particular forum because I don't think this is the right forum without, preparing ourselves for such a dispute, but the more we could show what a dispute is, how to do it nicely, how to stay friends afterwards, how to communicate effectively, model that for the world. That is what I think the essence of this mission is. So kudos to the RCA for doing that, and it's something that I think we can all learn from. You could search online. You can see how they, the various things. I think they put it up on YouTube, where you could find the link to it. But I want to close with the following idea to take it out.
Rabbi, what is it called so that we could look it up?
Search Rabbinical Council of America or RCA, and Disputes for the Sake of Heaven. I don't have a link. If you can't find it, text me. I'll find you a link for it.
Thank you.
Okay, so just in terms of, you know, going from the political and even the halachic realm, because, you know, I know halacha, some of us are involved with deciding halacha, some of us aren't. Politics, we're all involved on some level. But the truth is, I think that for most of us, it's just theoretical rather than practical. You know, we talk politics, we don't do politics. You know, because of that, it's not, you know, it's important to know how to communicate to our friends about it. But probably the most disputes that we have are with family members or friends about things that are not politics and that are not morality and that are not halacha. It's just, again, take out the garbage. No, you take out the garbage. Or, you know, why didn't you do this for me? Or why didn't you do that? Right? Those types of arguments. And when it comes to those types of interpersonal arguments, it's interesting that as far as we saw, we didn't do an exhaustive survey of the commentaries don't really pick up on the Mishnah talking about that. And maybe the Mishnah isn't talking about that. And I think part of that is, you know, part of that is because, you know, it's easy to talk about the truth when it comes to halachic decisions and maybe, you know, truth, right, wrong when it comes to political decisions. But when it comes to these types of agreements, I think when we look at it from the sake of right and wrong and truth and falsehood is where we get into trouble, right? So, you know, you said this. No, you said this. No, I said, right? I have to prove that I'm right. I once wrote something about this in one of the Psych for Torahs, but I think that, I mean, it's a famous line, right? Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy, right? Or the way one of my mentors said it, would you rather be right or would you rather be married, right? So meaning if you keep looking for right and to prove truths in those types of disputes, you will fail. Because it's not about being right, it's about having a relationship. And the more we look for MS and for the sake of heaven, that's why I'm disputing, the more we're going to run into issues. So I think that on some level, this Mishnah isn't talking to those types of disputes because those types of disputes will actually be worse when they're done for the sake of heaven. Let's keep heaven and truth and you know, morality out of discussions of who's taking out the garbage, right? And out of those types of interactions, because that's just going to make it sort of too intense. It's going to make it too important, and it's not, right? It's not. It's these are little things that are more important to forget about who's being right, but figure out how can I have a relationship with this person that's going to last? And usually that's by not having arguments about, you know, who's right and who's wrong, because that usually leads to more chaos than more disputes than any shalom bias that we might have. Much more to say on that, but we'll maybe a different time. I'm just finishing up here. I'm seeing in the chats the book of the righteous mind, Jonathan Haidt, Haidt, Righteous Mind. Highly suggested if you're interested in that type of stuff. And then about the comment of many people are concerned about their future that relies on the politics, so emotions are high. Yeah, money, again, politics isn't, politics about money, politics about values, politics about, you know, talk about like things like abortion. It's about right or wrong. It's about, you know, there's a lot flying high, for sure. Emotions are high. That's part of his point. And that's why it's so important that we still do it, right? I think I'm going to try one last thing here. Joe Schreiber, apparently on Facebook here from Israel, wants to be in the video. I don't know how this works. This is the first time I'm doing this. Let's see if we can do this. How does this work? Joe? I don't know. Bring them on camera. Cool feature. Joe, you there? I don't know what's happening. All right, technology these days. Bring them on camera. And I think that might have been a mistake. All right, Joe, it's good to see you on Facebook, but I don't know exactly how that works with bringing you on camera. We'll explore that. Thank you all for your indulging and learning of this Mishnah. Again, if you want to talk about it more later on, feel free. We'll be happy to try to have a discussion about this. For now, we'll call it a day, and we'll move on to the next Mishnah next week.